This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Chris Reesey.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Chris, you've been talking to us about your experience in the Navy, and we got up to the point you'd taken an old ship back to the UK and you were bringing another replacement ship back for New Zealand?
Yes.
Okay. So how did that journey go? That was better than the outward journey?
Well, there's a bit of between.
Okay, go for it.
Now, we were there for several months while I was still getting that ship ready. But we had arrived in England just before Christmas, 1955. Now, my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, in other words, my grandfather's wife, she had several sisters and a brother that was still alive and in England, and she'd written to one of them saying that I was going over there, and I received a letter from this particular great aunt, or I think he called her, to say I was quite welcome to go there for Christmas leave if I wanted to, and I could take a friend with me if I wanted to. So two of us probably went up to New Addington, which was just out of East Croydon, which was what? The southern edges of London.
Yeah.
I think. And that was an adventure and a half as well. We got there and we found that we were sitting on the edge of the seats and have I disturbed that cushion too much or whatever.
Well, they were very prim and proper, were they?
We were certainly made welcome. But I walked out in the kitchen one day and here was this young lady, teenager, about to walk out of the kitchen to go out the door. And I said something to my aunt. Who is she? Oh, you don't want to know her. But she's a cousin of yours. With a second cousin.
Oh, a distant cousin,
or something like that. I can never keep track of what's what in that lot. And she lives just down the road. I thought, we've been here a week and we've never even known she existed. So I thought, stuff this. I raced out the door, down the footpath, and caught up with this girl. And we started talking. Turned out she was about 2 years older than me. But she lived just down the road and around the corner a tiny bit. And she said, well, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, nothing, we haven't been told anything, that anything's been arranged. She said, I'll take you into London and show you to the sights of London tomorrow. I said, fine, good. So I walked back and I said to him, my friend, Don, Ruth is going to take us into London tomorrow to show us Madame Tussauds, Hyde Park and Tower of London and all that sort of thing. He said, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And I went and told my aunt. She said, no, you're not. You're not to have anything to do with her. Speak your pardon. And she said, I've got it arranged. We're going down to Kent tomorrow for you to meet another of your aunts. And just the way she said it, I said, no, we're not. And I walked into Don and I said, pack your bags. we're moving out. Mm. And we did. Mm. We packed our bags, walked down the road to this other aunt's place. Can we stay here for the rest of our leave? Mm. Certainly.
Mm. When you say the other aunt, is that the one where the girl was from?
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
And we found the place was worn out, scruffy, or not so much scruffy, but untidy. Yeah. You know, but we felt really comfortable there. Mm.
So there'd been a sort of falling out between the two aunts, I think.
Because, as I found out, this girl was an unwed mother.
Oh.
And those were in the days of...
Okay.
And the next morning I heard a row from out in the street, and I poked my head out, and here was this girl and the aunt that we'd walked out from,
mm-hmm.
standing out in the middle of the street, and boy, they were really going at it. Mm-hmm. And my aunt was accusing Ruth of taking Don and I into a brothel in London.
Well, and you thought, oh, we're on it here, and did she?
That was further from the truth. You couldn't get further from the truth than that.
Okay.
And eventually I got a letter from my maternal grandmother back in Auckland. And boy, did she get stuck into me in this letter. Mm-hmm. So obviously the first aunt, Amy, had written to my grandmother. So I thought, what the hell am I going to do about this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to write my grandmother back in Auckland and straighten everything out. And got it all straightened out. But after that, whenever we had a weekend leave or anything from, because we were based in Plymouth, we caught the train up to London, changed trains, and then another bus out to New Eddington. We went to Ada's place each time, and we completely ignored Amy.
Mm.
And we couldn't have had a better time if we tried. I remember one weekend when I went up there just by myself, because my friend was a different trade than I was, and you know, worked different times and that sort of thing. I went up there, and my uncle said to me, come on, we're going down to the pub. I said, okay. He said, get ready. I said, I am ready. And I was just dressed in old clothes. He says, now get into the uniform. And I said, wear uniform all day, every day. It's good to be out of a uniform for a change.
He said, wanted to show you off.
Get into uniform or we're not going. So I reluctantly got into uniform, got down to the pub. He walked in the door. I was right behind him. And immediate shout, who's that young Kiwi with you? Neither of us spent a penny.
Mm.
We were there for a good few hours.
Mm.
Mm. We just didn't spend anything. We were shouted all the way through. Also, in between waiting for our replacement ship to be ready for us, there was nothing to do with some of us very young sailors, so they wanted to do something with us. So there was a heap of us, 14 by 3, that makes 42. 41 of us were sent to Royal Navy ships.
Mm-hmm.
And 42 to one, 42 to another, and 41 to the third.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the one with 41. And that ship promptly sailed and went up to Londonderry in Northern Ireland, which most Irish like to call Derry, not Londonderry.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the 13 of us that were on the ship, I was the only wireless telegraphist, Kiwi wireless telegraphist. All the other wireless telegraphists were Royal Navy.
Mm.
And in charge of us was a leading telegraphist, Welshman, nicknamed Taff. What else?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he was an ex-boxing champion of the Mediterranean Fleet. And I was the most junior out of all the telegraphers, regardless of nationality or anything else. But, boy, did I learn my job.
It was quite different, was it, than the Royal Navy compared to the New Zealand Navy?
No.
No?
No, it was virtually exactly the same.
Okay.
But I was actually doing something that I'd been trained for, rather than scrubbing out offices cleaning stations and all that sort of thing. And I was actually doing what I was trained for, hands-on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I rapidly became very good. And I was still 17 years old.
Hmm.
17 years old. Yeah, I was still 17 years old. And the leave that was imposed on us was 2100 leave every night. That's 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock, yeah.
Yep. And
what do you mean 2100 leave? You mean you could go from 9 o'clock, or you had to be back at 9 o'clock?
We had to be back at 9 o'clock.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so on the gangway, when we were alongside in Derry, I had a Royal Navy quartermaster on, and then a Royal New Zealand Navy bosun's mate, offsider. And at 2100, the officer watch would come up and have a look on the desk and inspect all the lifty cars and everything else. Oh, very good to see all the Kiwis back on time. Most of us at that particular time were hiding behind wharf sheds waiting for the officer of the day to disappear so we could sneak back on board. And quite often it was midnight or so before we got back on board.
Okay. Yeah.
We'd been ashore all that time.
Uh-huh.
I remember one morning, the duty petty officer came round the mess deck to make sure everybody was up, and he shook my hand and said, "Up you get. And where were you at 0300 this morning?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You certainly weren't turned into your hammock, because you weren't here at 3 o'clock in the morning." I said, "Yes, I was." "No, you weren't." But what had happened was, in amongst the Kiwis that were posted to that ship as well were three New Zealand signalmen.
Mm.
And one of them happened to be the duty signalman that night, and the duty signalman always slept in the wireless office.
Mm-hmm.
And because the wireless office was a restricted area, the duty petty officer wasn't allowed in. But what had happened was I had gone round the corner of the wireless office and got my head down.
Mm-hmm.
And then at an appropriate time, I woke up and went down to my mess deck and slung my hammock in and turned in, so that when the duty petty officer came round in the morning, I'd be fast asleep in my hammock.
Uh-huh.
He never caught me.
Yeah.
But out of the 13 of us Kiwis, 9 got charged with various offences. 2 of them got 14 days cells. And one of them spent his 14 days in the cells at the Naval Air Station Eglinton, in, which was just outside of Derry. And the second one was charged a bit shortly before we left the ship to go back to the Bologna. And he did his 14 days cells in the naval base in Devonport, England. And his 14 day cells was very, very different from the other blokes. He had to pick oakum most of the time. Now, oakum was sort of tarred rope with tarred going through it, and he had to separate it with the strands and everything else. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the most soul-destroying punishments that anyone could ever get.
Why is that?
Just tedious or dirty? Or
tedious, dirty, and it's so hard.
Okay.
You try to get a rope about that thick.
Yeah, you're going, that's about 5 centimetres in diameter?
I don't know. The,
yeah, something just
rough. Various widths, some
yeah. You're holding a pretty thick rope, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. It's in a tar.
Yeah.
You try and get that separated out of tar. Mm. It's a real soul-destroying job.
So, now, I was going to ask you, because you've got, obviously, family connections back to England, so you had had some images of England before you went, and then you saw some of it there. What was your impression?
Well, my father had met somebody during the Second World War who was a Royal Navy officer, and he'd written to this officer to say that his son would be over. So when we arrived in England, we berthed alongside HMS Vanguard, which was a battleship. And to get ashore, we had to go from the Black Prince onto the Vanguard, cross the quarter deck of the Vanguard, and onto the wharf. And we swore black and blue it took us at least 5 minutes to get from the gangway from the Black Prince to the gangway to get onto the wharf at the other side of the quarter deck. It was such a huge ship. It was such a big ship that we were sent over to do some more reception exercises in the bridge wireless office of the ship. We got lost in the bridge. It was so huge. We just couldn't find the bridge wireless office. However, we did end up in the Duke of Edinburgh's quarters. But we got back to the Black Prince, and we didn't, having not read a drop of Morse at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, this Royal Navy officer come down to meet me, and he told me where he lived, etc., and he said, you're quite welcome to come up any time you want. So, for a start, I used to go up there, knocked on the door, pounded on the door. No answer. Pounded on the door even louder, and eventually somebody would rush out and open the door. Oh, you know where to hang your coat, Chris? And they'd disappear. So I'd hang up my coat and I'd walk, sort of follow them in, and here they were watching television. All the seats lined up in front of the television.
Yeah.
And I was sitting at the back. And it was in the early days.
And before television in New Zealand, so...
Hmm?
Before television in New Zealand, so it was something new for you?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Including normal transmission will be resumed as soon as possible,
yeah. Yes.
And then the big ads on top of that. And sometimes during an ad, somebody would rush out the kitchen, put the kettle on, and come back for a cup of tea. And I'd be virtually ignored. And then I'd look at my watch and think, oh, about time I got back on board.
Did you find television interesting then?
No.
Is it what they're doing, just sitting at
what?
Yeah.
Looking at normal transmission will be resumed as soon as possible.
Yeah.
The
yes.
No, it no. was not.
Yeah. Okay.
And quite often there's interference as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. But you, as they were given your training, you'd know about moving the aerial around to get the best reception.
No.
Okay.
No.
So you weren't impressed?
Yeah. I was not impressed at all. And then I'd say, I've got to get going. I've got to get back on board. And the voice would say, oh, you, without turning your head around, oh, you know where your coat is?
Yeah.
And I'd go out, pick up my coat and just be back on board.
Yeah.
And I thought that.
Yeah.
If that's television,
yeah.
You know what you can do with it.
Yeah.
And then later on, when I was still going to see quite a bit, my fairly new wife said to me, I want to watch television while you're away at sea. Not having a television. I flatly refused to buy a television.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I gave way and got a rental television for a bit. But it didn't go on before the news went on at 6 at night. No way we were watching it during the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And I am still the same way. I do not watch television during the daytime unless it's something I really, really want to watch.
Okay, so people with television might just sit and stare at it. What was your, partly you were away in the Navy, but what was your idea of what people would be doing but for the television being there? There'd be what, playing cards, they'd be singing, they'd be
Or card games or, board games or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But England itself, did you think, lots of people, very crowded, very old buildings or...
Lots of bombed out buildings, etc.
So that was still the damage from the war.
A lot of it around.
Yeah. Yep. When I arrived in New Zealand and came to straight to Palmerston North, and the taxi driver knew I'd just arrived, took me through the square and said, "This is the centre of town." And I thought, the only way in Britain you'd have a big empty space like that was if it was a bomb site that hadn't been redeveloped.
I got a mad mention. Yes.
What about the people? English people? I thought they were very different from New Zealanders?
A lot of them. Well, no, because I was on ships that were mainly crewed with.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
With
English, yeah.
Not just English, but Scots and Irishmen and. Welshmen, etc. Because then the Royal New Zealand Navy was virtually underneath the Royal Navy.
Yeah.
All the publications that we used were Royal Navy publications that we just followed.
Mm.
So if the Royal Navy publication said that you shall do such and such under a certain circumstance, whether it applied to New Zealand or not, didn't matter. We did it.
This is part 3. Listen next week for part 4.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.